Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is the Frey Podcast, brought to you by thefrey.com, a place for women who want more from life. This is what I want. This is what I need. If you don't have to go, I can set you free. Are you gonna make a move? Are you gonna come and see? Whatever you wanna do, you know it's cool with me. Today's podcast is a conversation with period educator Melina from Blooming Periods. During our chat today, we talk about the importance and also the actuality of how to have conversations with our children about the menstrual cycle and why it's so incredibly important that we do this, because it is. The more ease we have surrounding these conversations, the more ease we're going to have as our children grow with tricky conversations, but also just the more ease they're going to have in life in understanding the other people that they have relationships with as they get older too. So we touch on those age-appropriate ways to have the conversations, whether or not we should sit down and have one big conversation or whether it's a series of little ones. We talk about some of the signs to keep an eye out for if you do have a little one in your house who may be getting a period soon, just so that we can be across that. We talk about the most common period products. We talk about bringing dads into the conversation as well, and also just our own relationship with our cycle and why that matters and how that impacts the way that we have these conversations. I really enjoyed my time chatting with Melina, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. It would mean a lot to me if you take a screenshot of this one, pop it up on your stories and tag us in that story. You can tag me at Kylie Camps. You can tag Melina at Blooming Periods, and then we can share that as well. The more parents especially that hear these types of conversation, I think the better. If you have someone in your life who you think would really benefit from this, please do go ahead and send this episode to them as a resource. All right, let's get into my chat with Melina. Melina, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to have these conversations with me. I've been really, really looking forward to it.
Thank you, Kylie. I'm so excited to get into this with you today.
How did you find yourself in the position of being a period educator? Like, what led you to this career?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it took me by surprise as well. So I went through all of my 20s basically on the pill, very disconnected from my body, had a lot of issues with my body and didn't realize it was the pill doing that to my body. But then I came off the pill with my husband, now husband, and we fell pregnant 3 months after that. So a little surprise, had no idea what was happening. So she's now 14, nearly 15, my oldest daughter. And I since had two more children. So I had three under three and a half. Crazy times. But, you know, during those times, I went from the pill to pregnancy and breastfeeding for 4 years. So again, still very completely disconnected from my cycle. And after my third child, I had a bit of a awakening, I guess you could say, with my menstrual cycle, and a bit of a healing process to learn about it. And then as my daughter, my oldest daughter, got older, she got to about 8 or 9, and I hadn't spoken about periods. I didn't speak about periods with any of my family, didn't grow up speaking about periods. And part of this awakening was learning about my menstrual cycle and just how powerful it is once I tuned into it. And my mind blew, basically. And I got to the point where I got actually pissed off that I hadn't been taught this information from much younger times, and not from anyone's fault. Like, our parents weren't taught how to talk about this either.
It was all hush hush.
It was all hush hush, yes. And my conversation with my mother lasted about 5 minutes and included a warning about being with my grandfather. So it was very confusing for me. And then apart from that, I didn't actually live with my mum. I lived with my father, three older brothers, very masculine home.
No wonder there weren't many period-friendly conversations.
No, and the younger sister. So, you know, my dad was the first person I told that I had my period. So anyway, I got to this point where I was pissed off and I thought, I cannot have my daughters not knowing about their bodies and not understanding really what is being feminine and how our cycle works for us. So I went on a mission to really consciously change the way I spoke in my own home. I started speaking. I started telling them when I had my period. I started inviting them to, you know, be a little bit more quiet when I needed them to be a bit more quiet. I started talking even with my husband about it, because previous to that, you know, I remember once leaving my cup in the shower and he was not impressed. But now, after speaking about it, you know, for many years, he's fine with that. You know, it took me by surprise, his reaction too. But, you know, there's a lot of appeasing other people and tiptoeing around things that we need to let go of. So, you know, from that point, I started talking to my friends about this idea that I had that I could teach other young girls, because I saw that there was a real gap there. And my friends were like, yes, please, I need help too. So yeah, it developed from there. And I've been running workshops now since the beginning of 2019. I've had many mothers, some stepmoms, some aunties, some sisters come through the workshops. And it's been a revelation, I think, to have conversations in homes that couldn't have been had before. So yeah, that's in a nutshell how I got to be here.
Yeah, and there's like much needed conversations, because as you said, our cycle, we didn't say exactly, but our cycle is integral to how we show up in the world. And I can relate, and I can imagine that anger that you felt to be like, oh my gosh, how have I not been told about this really important compass that's within me that dictates so much of my experience here on earth? Why have I not been walked through this? And I think it's a really exciting time right now that so many people are willing to understand their cycle and are willing to have these conversations with their kids and make it much more of a, oh yes, like an everyday conversation. It's not a taboo topic like it was, I don't think, 30, 40 years ago, I imagine. It's so important. And I can understand your girlfriends cheering you on saying, yes, we need this. Yes. Because when I've spoken about periods on social media, I have so many women reach out to me and say, but how? How do you have that conversation with your little boys? And I guess that's just reflective of their upbringing. You know, if it wasn't a common conversation, it's going to feel almost shameful.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think we are dealing with a lot of shame ourselves, and we need to, as mother, I see this all the time in my workshops with mothers who come in, dealing with their own shame. And we don't even know it's there. We don't even know it exists.
Why does it exist? And that's such a big question.
I think because a lot of it stems from our first period and the hush hush, like you said. It's either hush hush, we don't talk about it, or there's a lot of confusion. So, you know, for mothers like my age, so I'm mid 40s, our experiences were often very quiet. Here's a book, here's a box of pads, this is what you do. That was it, until you got you might have got your period and they celebrated it, but then didn't talk about it again. And there's a lot of confusion around, well, should I be happy about this or should I not talk about this? It's a very confusing time. And with rites of passage, as the first period is, in that time around your first period, the time leading up to and for a couple of years after. How you go into that rite of passage is how you see yourself in society as a woman. So if you're coming through confused, you know, you're going to go into your teen years as well, confused about where women sit in society or where a female with a period sits in society. And I think it all stems from there. So, you know, with more open conversations, particularly with, like, for yourself with young boys, that really is reducing the shame and the stigma a lot. So, you know, congratulations to you for speaking about this with your boys in a normal manner, like any kind of bodily function. It's a just a normal process.
One of the questions that I had come through was, how do you have these conversations without being awkward with your kids? And I had to really think about it. And I think because I've never felt awkward about it myself as an adult, yes, as a teenager, we can come back to that sort of our first period experience, but as an adult, I see it as it's a matter of fact, and it's so important to me. And like you, when I finally understood my cycle, and I'm not an expert on it, but I understand it so much more than I did 10 years ago, I was like, wow, this is a breakthrough. This is amazing to actually know myself. And I really do talk about it with the boys as casually as I talk about what I'm putting in their lunchbox. Yes. You know, they will say, I'll say to them, I'm due for my period, so I'm going to be a little crankier today. I might need this, that from talk to them about it. Or I might say, I've got my period. Could you please step out of the bathroom? I'm going to put a tampon in. Like, I'll really talk to them about it like it's commonplace. And in turn, they don't have any awkwardness around it at all. Yes. It's a really nice thing to see. But interesting.
I think a lot of awkwardness also comes from the thought that to talk about periods means you have to talk about sex, and that periods means having babies, and babies means we have to have a sex conversation.
I talk about sex with the boys, I was going to say all the time, but we don't talk about it all the time, but we've had that conversation.
Yes.
And again, there's no awkwardness around that either. Like, funnily enough, one of my boys, and they're nearly nine, he said to me not long ago, Mum, can you and Brendan not have sex because I really don't want you to have a baby just yet? Like, it's just like over dinner, can you guys just not have sex? And I thought, this is so funny how at ease they are with that phraseology. But that makes sense. If you're awkward about explaining sex, then you're probably going to feel awkward about explaining periods too.
And what I say about that is to reframe it, because our period is our menstrual cycle, and our menstrual cycle is an indication of a healthy female body. So if we're looking at, like you say, just how a body functions, how, you know, what is a healthy female body, that's where we can start. And it comes, you know, it is relatable to what you're putting in their lunchbox, because a healthy body is also what you eat. So, you know, there is relatability there.
Yeah, absolutely. What age do you think that we should begin having conversations about menstrual cycles with kids?
I think if we start normalizing our own cycle as early as possible, that's a good place to start. Now, as I mentioned, I didn't. So I know for women that haven't, that's, you know, you are thinking, oh my gosh, where do I start? Now, I've got probably a social experiment in my own family, because I made the effort to have the conversation with my oldest daughter, probably when she was maybe, you know, 10 or 11 is when I really started to talk about it, which I think personally now is a bit late, because, you know, some girls do get their period at 9. But for me, that's where I was, that's where I had to, you know, that was.
Yeah, you where can I only was. Start where you are.
Yes. But at the same time, my youngest daughter was about 6. So she was learning the same as my oldest daughter. And factually, she just took everything in and went, okay. And, you know, so it's all very relative to what their brain understands. And, you know, again, I related it to a healthy female body, what a female body does. So there wasn't necessarily any sex talk. If they asked about it, if they asked about the baby, and, you know, I gave them the information that was age appropriate to them. But yeah, I think if we just start normalizing our own cycle and period as early as possible. Now, if we don't have a cycle, if we don't have a period, for whatever reason.
Of course, for people who might be on birth control or whatnot.
Yes. We still are cyclical. So, you know, you can talk about times when you're feeling a lot lower and that you might need a little bit of rest. So I think honoring the cycle, even though we aren't bleeding, is still a very important part to include, and can be a place to start for those women who don't have a period.
If someone is on birth control, and I'm a little bit ignorant on the topic of birth control for my own experience because I've never been on it, but if someone is taking the pill, for example, do they have that cyclical drop? Because I guess my understanding was with the synthetic hormones, they were kind of I'm moving my hand along.
Yeah.
People can't see this because it's a podcast, Kylie. But, you know, my understanding was kind of people are just cruising along in that flat line and they don't have that cycle as much as they would.
On the birth control, that is correct. Yeah. So if you're on the Mirena, if you've had a hysterectomy and still have your ovaries, if you're on what else? If there's, I'm just trying to think of other examples. Those are probably the main
injection.
The injection, where you're still kind of ovulating, then definitely you are cyclical. If you are on the birth control pill, that does flatten things a lot more. So that is a little bit trickier. And I think, you know, I think just being aware of your energy around that time, around any time that you're feeling a bit lower. Another thing you can do is use the phases of the moon as your guide point. So the full moon is your ovulation, and the new moon is your bleed time. If you want to kind of cycle track without a period, you can use that.
That's a good idea. For when we are beginning to have conversations with kids that are perhaps 5 or 6, even younger, do you suggest sitting them down and having a conversation, or do you suggest it more being like just casual information, you know, such as, you know, they might be in the bathroom with you while you're going to the bathroom and might notice that there's blood when you're using the toilet or something like that. And you can say, oh, that's just my period, without having a big conversation. Or do you think, like, I guess my question is, what way would you go about it with a really young child?
So again, I think normalizing what is normal for you, and you can even leave your products around so they can ask a question. But one of the first things I recommend is for women to prepare themselves to have conversations. So I would recommend asking yourself how you want your daughter to feel about her body and her period once her period comes, and why you want her to feel that way. Do you want her to, you know, many of us went through, particularly teen years, hating our period, dreading our period. But I don't want that for my daughters. I understand that she might, but I don't want that for her. So I want to role model for her a woman who uses her cycle to her, you know, to empower herself. So, you know, role modeling what that is in you as well. So as well as asking those two questions of what you want for her, ask also how you feel about your own period yourself, excuse me, how you feel about your own period yourself and why you feel that way. So again, is there something that happened around your first period that made you not like your period? Is there something that you might have experienced, you know, abnormalities, you might have endometriosis, there might be things around your period that you don't like, but you don't want to pass on those negative feelings to your daughter. So assessing all of that first as well, I think is really important. And then I think it's really important to have lots of little ongoing conversations. And the reason why I think this is because periods is the start of many awkward conversations that you will likely have to have with your child as they grow up. So, you know, I've got two teenagers now and my youngest is 11. And, you know, we're having conversations around pornography, around consent, around heartbreak, around lots of topics that, again, I think if you've normalized periods and normalized sex conversations, these conversations come much easier. But yeah, lots of little conversations along the way means that you're an open door as well. They can come to you whenever, wherever, in any way possible. So yeah, I mean, there will be times where you'll need to sit down and explain a lot more, explain the process, explain, you know, how you use a pad or a tampon or whatever. There will be bigger conversations in there, but using the bigger conversations in amongst a lot of smaller conversations is what I would recommend.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And I think too, just letting your kids know that they can ask you questions and come back to it. It doesn't have to be a one and done conversation that I think so many of us have experienced. When I think of my own experience with my first period, it was very much like, oh yes, cool, you've got your period. I'm in the middle of between two girls. My mum was always very open talking about her period. Like, it wasn't a taboo topic at all in our house, but still I didn't have that education on what it actually meant. I just knew that roughly once a month I would have some stomach pains, be uncomfortable, not be able to go to pool parties. That was kind of my depth of understanding. So I love that advice for listeners to really get clear on what they want their cycle to mean to them before imparting advice on our children, because yeah, we can easily pass on, you know, our negative experiences of being like, oh, you know, it's a real drainer that I've got my period, it's a real inconvenience. Or we can acknowledge that yes, sometimes there are inconvenient things that come along with it, but it is the sign of a healthy body and it is a reason to celebrate, and we can understand how to use our cycle in a way that's going to empower us in all areas of life.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yes, exactly. And I like that you brought up the language, because I think language is really important. The way that we speak about our period is what is going to be instilled subconsciously within them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any difference in the way that you would talk about periods with boys versus girls as they're growing up?
There are some things. I generally, so I've got a son who's in the middle of two, and he knows all about periods. But I guess there's deeper things that I go into with my daughter. You know, I am asking her about her cervical mucus. I'm asking her those kind of things. So, you know, with my son, I'm not so much going to speak about that. But I absolutely talk to him. Like, I tell all of my family when I have my own period. I'm often saying to him, you know, when you've got females around you, you need to be aware of their cycle and aware of their energy levels as well. So in terms of that, I don't distinguish any difference between my son and my daughters.
And what about bringing dads into the conversation? How important is that?
That's very important, very important. And I think because, you know, as mothers, we're not always around. Sometimes we're busy. Sometimes, you know, there might be a, particularly if there's single parents involved and you have shared custody, particularly then, I think it's really important that a father knows, just that they have their support as well. Because what can happen too, once a girl gets her first period, sometimes the father can look at the daughter in a different light. They're no longer the little child that they had, and they're dealing with things. And this, I think, comes back to the father's view on women as well. But he needs to be really supportive of what the daughter is going through. And I think as mothers, again, we can role model that. We need to help our fathers and our men understand that as well, because it's a very big learning process for them. Like I mentioned, my husband went from not liking the side of a cup to being okay with it. And actually now he will come to me, he's in sales, and he will say, oh, I had a conversation with one of the receptionists in my customers about her daughter and endometriosis. I'm like, where did that come from? So, you know, I think definitely including them just to show our daughters, just, you know, they're going to go on to have male partners or colleagues or whatever. So that gives them, again, a role model of what they can have in a man that supports them being cyclical.
Yeah, and I feel like that should just be the base level. Like, it's almost like the bar is on the floor if we're going to get excited that they understand our cycle. Like, they really, like, the next generation, I would hope, of males does understand the cycle and realize that women are living in this world that's built for a male cycle, not so much a female cycle, and to really, really understand that to the best of their ability.
And just on that, so a male cycle goes for 24 hours.
This is like something that I will scream until the day I die, because I didn't know this till I was in my 30s. I had a guest on the podcast, an incredible guest, and she said that to me. She's like, you know, we've really got to understand we're living in a world that was built for a man cycle. And then we dug deeper and she explained a male has a 24-hour cycle. So I talk to the kids about this all the time, and that you little toads will have the exact same cycle for 24 hours, whereas we're on this 28-day ride.
Yes, and they get to sleep when they're meant to be, you know, when we would be bleeding, they're sleeping. Yes. I explained that to my husband one time, because I was – you know, I'd pushed myself. I was having my period. I was fed up with the house being a mess. And I pushed myself to clean every inch of the house, which I wouldn't normally do. And I said to him, I can't keep doing this, because this is like you would be sleeping. And I explained that process. And he sat there and looked at me and said, well, just stop then. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, it's easy for that.
Yes, that's such a male response. Well, here's the solution. It's like, that's so the solution simple, for this 5-minute period. But again, the fact that I didn't know that till my 30s is wild to me. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I feel so passionate about telling and talking to our children about this, because we can have conversations about equality, and we certainly have a lot of those in our household. And then the boys can sort of get caught in the weeds of going, well, a man and a woman, we're the same. No, we're not the same. We're equal, but we're not the same. And you need to understand some of the ways that we are not experiencing sameness. We're not operating in the same world. So I think that's, really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned earlier, Melina, that some little girls are starting their period as young as 9.
Or even 8, Simon.
8. Yeah. Why does that happen? Why does it happen earlier for some and later for others?
It is starting to get earlier and earlier, and there's been a number of things that have shown. So I've looked into some studies around this. One really interesting study linked fluoride in water to earlier puberty. I know, I was like, wow. So, and this was based in, I think it was based in New York City. Yes, which blew my mind. I think a lot of it also is the additional toxins and chemicals that we're exposed to can bring on puberty earlier. And there is something called, I've actually forgotten the name of it, but it's a, it's where they go through puberty much earlier, which actually has detrimental effects later on. But, you know, I think we're exposed to so much more that mimic estrogen. So when we, you know, our estrogen is the hormone that tells our ovaries to ovulate. And there's so much that mimic estrogen that our body takes on as estrogen. And, you know, I think that plays a big part in earlier puberty.
It's interesting because I remember when I was a teenager hearing conversations just in the zeitgeist about how teenagers were having bigger breasts because of the hormones in chickens. Like it sounds like it's kind of almost that sort of thing, like a continuation of like there's hormones in our foods. It's the chemicals that we're exposed to. Like that's just so fascinating.
Yeah. So there's something like 85,000 extra additional chemicals and toxins that have been introduced into our society since the 50s. 85,000. And, you know, if you think of plastics, everything is in plastic now. So plastic releases, especially in heat. So if you're drinking bottled water that has been exposed to heat, that leaches into the water.
Being left in the car.
Being left in, yeah, exactly. You know, your shampoos and conditioners, your everything that we clean with.
I'm just going to push my pump water bottle far to the side there that I've been drinking out of. Pretend you didn't see that, Melina.
We're human. It's important just to be aware of these things. So it's, you know, there's a lot in our foods and our drink, like the tap water. So making sure we have filtered water, lots of things, beauty products, foods, plastics, so many things. So trying to reduce the number, you know, we can't eliminate it because it's all around, but being aware of and reducing those things will not only help with during puberty, but also in the first stages of our bleeding where excess estrogen can be an issue, and also towards the end around perimenopause where excess estrogen can be an issue in any phase, but particularly those times when we don't have as much progesterone to balance it out.
I imagine you go into this during the workshops a lot more as well, and people can really sort of get into the weeds of it.
I touch on this. I think, you know, as we're learning, we might not want to, it might be a bit much to take on, but I definitely touch on these things about using more natural products and not drinking tap water. But this will be something that I do go into, particularly with my subscription box for teens when they've already got their cycle. Yeah.
Amazing. It's also interesting. And you raise a good point of not wanting to overwhelm people with too much information because there's already so much to take on. I imagine too, and I'm certainly no scientist or no doctor, but I imagine there's just a biological and physiological reaction as well that happens for some people. It's just unfortunate if some 8-year-olds start their period sooner rather than earlier.
Yeah, it can be, and it can
be. There's
got to be
an element
tough.
That's out of our control, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's, I think it's a sign of the times, but it can be really, really difficult. So, at the average age of a first period, it's still around that kind of 12, just over 12 years old. But they are noticing it earlier, and I've had many girls through the workshops that, you know, have started at 9 or 10. Which it can be really difficult, particularly with schooling. You know, that can be really hard, particularly when...
So little.
Yeah, so little. Friends might not know about it. Friends might not understand what's happening. The school might not be set up to, you know, have even bins in the toilets or let the girls leave to change a pad or access their bag. There's a lot to navigate when they're that little. So, you know, I do have resources for parents to help with that, to, you know, communicate with schools and get schools on board.
For parents that are raising daughters, what are some things that we should keep our eyes open? Like what are some of the symptoms that perhaps our children are about to experience their first period?
Yeah, so I've got this little saying that makes it nice and easy, and I talk to the girls about this as well. So the first one, it goes pubes, boobs, oh, I said that wrong. Boobs, pubes, grow, flow. So okay. the first sign is boobs. So they start to develop breast buds. So that's the hard under the nipples. So that's completely normal. So I was talking to my daughter, about my 11-year-old, about this yesterday when she first started getting her breast buds. She was like, oh, my gosh, I've got breast cancer, because they are hard lumps under the nipples. So that's a normal, yes. So they have the breast buds, which then slowly develop into breasts. Then they start developing pubic hair. So firstly around that pubic region and then later on under the arms. Then they'll go through a big growth spurt. So the year before they will start their period, they can grow up to 10 centimetres or even a little bit more. So, yeah, big growth spurt. And girls will nearly be at their full adult height once they get their period. They'll only grow on average about 7 centimetres after their first period. So once they have their first period, their growth plates all start to slowly close over. So you're looking out for a big growth spurt, and then they start their period from there.
That's such helpful information, and I'm sitting here nodding because one of my girlfriends, she got her period very young, and then in the next breath she said to me, and I've also been the same height since I was 9 as well, and I didn't realize that there was that actual correlation. I thought perhaps that was more coincidence, but, yeah, that's really fascinating to know.
What's a good sign, a good way to look out for when that period's coming.
Yeah, it's a handy little saying to keep in mind for sure. What are the most popular period, I guess, products right now? Because when I was growing up, it was either a pad or a tampon. And I remember thinking tampons were just the scariest thing ever for years. Like I was so scared to use a tampon. But what are you seeing as like the popular go-to product now?
So definitely disposable pads are still a really really popular product to start with. And I think for me personally, I think they are an important one to start with, particularly because a girl can see her period. So she can get a gauge of when she needs to change. She can get a gauge of what her flow looks like and start to get familiar with what her period is. Now, one of the things that blew my mind I don't really want to use the word disgusted, but shocked with because I've been a cup user for over a decade. So when I was looking into products for my own girls to use, I couldn't believe that most of the products available to us contain 4 plastic bags and 1 packet of pads. There's so much plastic in normal pads. They take up to 500 to 800 years to break down, one pad.
Wow.
Yes. So I know, I was shocked. So I went on a hunt for biodegradable and sustainable organic pads. So now we have access to pads that do break down much, much quicker. So a Melbourne-based brand called Suno is a bamboo pads that break down, and Love Luna also have pads that break down within 180 days. So much, much quicker. So there's no plastic. They're organic. They're bamboo, really, really soft as well. So you're looking out for organic, again, because you don't want those chemicals to near us, and sustainable, so biodegradable pads. And then there's period underwear, which is amazing. I love them. And the girls, so in the workshop, we look at all the products. They get to try them out. They get to, you know, see how they work. We do little samples of things. And the mums get to see them as well. So period underwear are great. Again, reusable. So they're not so hard on the environment. You're not throwing away a lot of products. And they also hold a lot more than a normal pad. So a pad might hold, 5 mils of blood, where a period underwear can hold up to 3 to 4 times that amount. So they could potentially go a whole school day with just the underwear. One thing I do recommend is, particularly when they're starting, is to wear a pad with the underwear, so they can go with a pad in the underwear. When they need to change that, they can just remove the pad put that in the bin, and then they've got their underwear on for the rest of the day. This can be particularly helpful if they do go to primary school where they might not be able to access their bag to get a change, or you know, they might not have pockets in their uniforms to put a pad
in
their
pocket. Even just the sound of having to open another pad and put it in, you know, it just kind of streamlines the process, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing which is fantastic is, I believe in New South Wales, Victorian and Queensland schools, they are going to have products available in the schools. I'm not sure when that comes out, and I'm not sure if it also includes primary schools or just high schools, but you know, that's another great thing that's happening. So yeah, definitely period underwear and the pads would be the way to go for when you're starting. And you know, many, many girls are also like you. It's very confronting seeing the tampons, and you know, I also show cups and they're like, oh, what is this? But you know, I tell the girls, I had the same experience that you did at 30 when I found out about cups. I was like, what is this? But, you know, that's okay. It's okay to have any kind of reaction. But then you can get curious. And then you can, when things feel like you might be interested, you know, you can explore it then. But just knowing that as an option down the line, and you might never choose to, that's fine as well. There's no right and wrong around any of it.
Absolutely. And I think that's such great and helpful advice, particularly about using a pad first, so that as you're beginning to understand your period, you can realize, oh, okay, it starts to change color towards the end, or I can see that my flow is tapering off, that sort of stuff. Because, yeah, if you go straight to period undies, you might miss that. So that's helpful.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that you have your subscription box for teenagers. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So again, so having worked with the tweens and then seeing my own daughter going through the first couple of years of her period, hearing from mothers who had come through the workshops when their daughters did get their period about what they can do next. Because sometimes, particularly if the girl is younger, they can kind of back off from the mum when they first get their period. There's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's an awkwardness, or it can be really hard for girls when they first start their period. Their body is doing something that they have no control over. And, you know, there's a lot to navigate. They don't know if what they're doing is normal, if it's okay. So I wanted to support the mums and the girls around this through their teen years and really educate them on their cycle. So, you know, there's lots of books and there's lots of ways of doing this, but the way that I saw this education really work is through also providing girls their period products that they need, as well as some really fun, exciting treats that they can receive at the time when their period is coming that makes them feel good about themselves.
Well, so it all goes towards that celebration experience, doesn't it? And who doesn't like receiving something in the mail?
I know. And opening, like, who doesn't love watching an unboxing of stuff as well? Like, you get to unbox stuff. So every month they'll get either pads or tampons of whatever they're using, plus some underwear. So they'll have new underwear and new pads come in. They'll also receive some self-care products. So this might be like a deodorant, or it might be some bath salts or lip balm, or something that, again, is really hormone friendly. So it doesn't include any toxins, isn't going to increase that estrogen load, and also educating around that, why we choose non-toxic products. Which I'm also working with some fabulous small businesses around, you know, around Australia, and supporting them and supporting each other, as well as some really nourishing treats. So, you know, some teas that might help with any kind of cramping, or some hot chocolates, or, you know, a Tim Tam or a chocolate or a cookie. Now, I want to add here, I went to try to find some healthy treats, and I have to say, I had no luck finding anything that was kind of palatable. Now, my kids were my testers and they were like, nah, I don't want this.
They're going to be ruthless, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I am going for chocolate, and because we do, you know, that's what we kind of reach for, and it's okay to have that every now and then. So, you know, there will be some treats in there as well. As well as, you know, so each month I receive an educational video on a particular topic to help them cycle track, to help them understand their hormones, to help them, you know, understand the phases of the cycle. So each month will come with this, as well as a little live Q&A. So I'm going to have a little private group in Instagram where if they've got any questions, I can come and answer those questions for them in there.
What an amazing, amazing service you're offering. I wish that I had that available as a teenager, even as someone who was very close with her mum and could ask questions. I think you're right. Sometimes you want to retreat and just kind of get through it on your own, but how nice to have something arrive to your doorstep that actually speaks to what you're going through. It's amazing. Where can people sign up for this?
So this is on bloomingperiods.co or in Instagram, Blooming Periods. You can come and follow me there. And I just wanted to add there too, I do see this being a mother-daughter thing as well. So when they get the informational, the educational videos, that they watch it together so they can, you know, learn together as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for spending some time sharing your wisdom on the topic. You mentioned your Instagram. It is at Blooming Periods. Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
Perfect. I'll put that in the show notes, so that people can find you and also learn more about your workshops and your subscriptions. But again, thank you so much for having this conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is what I want. What I need, if you don't have to go, I can set you free. Are you gonna make a move? Are you gonna come and see? Whatever you wanna do, you know it's cool with me. Whisper in the dark, whispers in the dark. You come to play, don't you? Looking for something new. I got a lot underneath, tricks up my
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.